is supported by Long Run Wealth, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Lake Placid, providing bespoke wealth management, retirement, and financial planning solutions, longrunwealth.com. And by the Adirondack Foundation, offering grants to help local communities address urgent needs and implement enduring solutions related to the coronavirus crisis. Learn more at AdirondackFoundation.org.
This is North Country Public Radio. It's 6 minutes, actually coming up on 7 minutes past eight on this Tuesday, February 23rd. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Coming up, we'll take a look at a few chilly pieces of Adirondack folk art, ice sculptures in Glens Falls, and the Saranac Lake Ice Palace. But first, here's news from North Country Public Radio.
Residents of nursing homes in New York will be able to receive visitors again starting this Friday, February 26th, under new rules laid out by Governor Cuomo and state health officials. From Albany, Karen DeWitt reports.
State officials had delayed reopening the nursing homes, closed to visitors since last March, until all of the residents were offered a chance to take the vaccine. 73% of residents have now agreed to receive both doses. 15,000 elderly residents of nursing homes and other long-term adult care facilities died of COVID-19 in the pandemic, the vast majority of them alone. The new visitation rules will vary depending on the rate of the virus in the county where the nursing home is located. State Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker says in counties where the rate of the virus is less than 5%, visitors to nursing homes do not have to be tested, although testing is encouraged. In counties where the rate of infection is between 5 and 10%, visitors would have to undergo testing and show a negative test result within 72 hours before they go to the home. Visitors to nursing homes will continue to be banned in counties where the virus rate is 10% or higher, or in any facility where someone has contracted COVID within the past 14 days. Zucker says exceptions will be made for visitors who have received the vaccine themselves.
If a visitor has had two vaccines and it has been 14 days since their second vaccine and they're still within 90 days of that second dose for the vaccine, then there's probably no need for a test. However, we encourage it to test anyway.
He says that's because vaccines might not prevent the asymptomatic spread of the virus, even in someone who has received both doses. In all homes and adult care centers, no more than 20% of the residents can receive visitors at any one time, and the homes are encouraged to set up separate rooms for visits. Masks and social distancing are required at all times. The announcement comes as welcome news to families who have waited more than 11 months to see their relatives in nursing homes, but others say the changes come too late. Senator Pam Helming, a Republican from Canandaigua, says she recently lost two relatives in nursing homes. She says while they did not die directly from COVID, she, like thousands of relatives of other nursing home residents, believed that social isolation led many frail elderly New Yorkers to decline, both mentally and physically.
The cause of death on my last loved one? Failure to thrive.
Helming says she is extremely thankful that visits can resume, but she says the months-long delay will not bring back people who she believes might otherwise have lived.
It's too late. And I have to wonder, could we have saved the lives of people? Could we have at the very least, reunited families and loved ones if the legislature had a say in these decisions that are being made?
Helming, along with all of the minority party Republicans in the legislature, intended to vote for a hostile amendment. It would rescind Cuomo's emergency powers under the pandemic. Many Democrats also back immediate revocation of the sweeping authority granted to the governor by the legislature last year, but Democratic majority leaders are working toward a plan that would instead curb the powers by appointing an Oversight Commission to review emergency orders. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
So as Karen just said, Governor Cuomo continues to face criticism for an executive order last year that required nursing homes to take in COVID-19 patients. But Priya Chidambaram, a senior policy analyst at Kaiser Family Foundation, says there's still not enough public data to explain what exactly happened over time because of his decision.
it's unclear whether that policy actually did lead to a significant number of infections and deaths in nursing homes. And so that's something that we still really haven't been able to answer.
More than 15,000 New Yorkers died of COVID-19 in nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and adult care centers over the course of the pandemic. That number is almost double what the Cuomo administration had said even a couple of months ago. The governor has repeatedly defended his management of the state's pandemic response.
Well, meanwhile, in our region, coronavirus infections continue to drop in the North Country, while the number of vaccines administered is going up. Emily Russell has the details.
The positive test rate in the North Country is 3.7%. That's now lower than the statewide average, which is 4.3%. And we are now seeing a good number of counties in the North Country reporting single-digit new cases each day. Herkimer County had just 5 new cases reported on Monday. Lewis County, 7 new cases. Warren County reported 9 new cases on Monday, but they did report 2 additional deaths. Health officials are saying what they're seeing now in terms of spread is it's actually happening in the workplace in Warren County. So they're encouraging people not to share meals or breaks with their coworkers. St. Lawrence County also reported a new death on Monday, 35 new cases. Jefferson County had more, 44 new cases reported on Monday. And then a roundup of the weekend's cases. Clinton County saw 67 new cases since last Friday with 1 additional death. In terms of vaccines, more than 122,000 people in the North Country have gotten at least the first shot of the vaccine, which is just under 30% of the region's population. Emily Russell, North Country Public Radio.
You can get more news all the time at our website, ncpr.org, or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It's 8:13.
You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. Just ahead, we'll hear from ICE artist Charlie Jones on creating a frozen tribute to frontline workers on the front lawn of the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls. More on that coming up in just a few minutes right here on the 8 o'clock hour.
Right now, we're listening to Dan Berggren out of Boston Spa. The 8 o'clock hour is supported by Adirondack Health in Saranac Lake, recently designated a comprehensive joint replacement center. Learn more at adirondackhealth.org, and by Adirondack Land Trust, improving trails at Coon Mountain Preserve in Westport so more people can enjoy nature with less impact. Adirondacklandtrust.org.
One Amish man was killed and another was injured in a buggy accident outside of Gouverneur this weekend. According to New York State troopers, a Brushton man in an SUV struck the horse-drawn buggy that 23-year-old Levi and 20-year-old Mose Schwartz and Truber of Antwerp were riding in. The coroner pronounced Levi dead at the scene, and the Gouverneur Rescue Squad drove Mose in an ambulance over to the Gouverneur Hospital to treat his leg and shoulder pain. Their horse was severely injured, too, and police are still investigating.
One of the main tourism centers in the Adirondacks is back open after shutting down for a week due to a COVID exposure. The Adirondack Lodge and High Peaks Information Center near Lake Placid reopened yesterday. The lodge, which hosts overnight Backpackers is back to its normal hours and availability. The Information Center has limited hours from 7 a.m. until 3 p.m. The Adirondack Mountain Club, which operates the facilities, announced the reopening on its Facebook page yesterday. It did not provide any details about the coronavirus exposure that led to the temporary closure.
An amusement park in the Adirondacks plans to reopen this summer after staying closed all last year because of the pandemic. The Great Escape in Lake George announced plans to open May 1st. New state guidelines allow amusement parks to operate at a third of their capacity. According to the Glens Falls Post-Star, the park is debuting the Adirondack Outlaw Ride. The ride will lift guests up 160 feet in the air and whirl them in circles at up to 50 miles per hour. Face masks will be required at the Great Escape, and the park says it has plans for extensive cleaning throughout the summer.
Saranac Lake's Winter Carnival was a lot smaller this year because of the pandemic. Most events were canceled, but volunteers were able to build the Ice Palace block by block. It's a tradition that began more than a century ago when the nation faced another deadly epidemic. NPR's Brian Mann reports.
The morning is shimmering bright and cold as a meat locker. Nancy Bernstein is down on her knees next to a waist-high wall of blue ice.
I'm slushing the blocks.
Using bright red rubber gloves and a trowel, she packs dripping slush into cracks between blocks of ice the size of college refrigerators.
To make them freeze together and bond together, we use a mixture of water and snow, kind of like mortar.
Bernstein works in the middle of a construction site at the edge of a frozen mountain lake. That's where the ice comes from. The blocks are quarried from the lake's surface each morning and hauled up on bulldozers. Men in spiked boots perch on one of the castle turrets, two stories high. The towers, too, are built entirely from ice. Using big metal ice tongs, they slide the fresh blocks into place, sort of like a massive Lego project.
This is my 14th year being in charge. That's my 39th year building.
Dean Baker, the palace foreman, says learning how to work safely with 600-pound blocks of slippery ice required a long apprenticeship.
Well, this morning we had a piece of ice break off with about four guys standing on it. And luckily we got them all off in time.
Baker says there was talk of canceling the project this winter because of the pandemic. There have been winters during the World Wars and the Great Depression when it didn't get built. But his crew wanted to keep the tradition going.
Matter of fact, the guy that I took over from, he said, you got to get the palace built. It's a centerpiece.
To promote social distancing, Baker and his volunteers kept the design simple. Picture a medieval castle big enough to fill a hockey rink. It turns out this tradition began because of another deadly disease, tuberculosis. A sanatorium devoted to treating tuberculosis opened here in Saranac Lake in the 1880s. Historian Caperton Tiso says the Winter Carnival was a way to cheer people up during a cold, dark season.
It went right along with their belief that people had to get out in the fresh air. It was good for them. It was good for curing tuberculosis. That was very much a part of the start of these palaces.
The builder of the village's first ice palace in 1898 was a famous architect, a guy named William Coulter, who came here when he caught tuberculosis. After Coulter, Tiso says, the craft needed to build this massive structure passed from generation to generation.
To build a palace like this, you have to know a lot about ice and how it works. It's a very technical thing to know.
On this day, Sue Abbott-Jones, a retired school teacher, is one of the volunteers braving the cold, carrying buckets of slush up from the lake.
I love this weather. I'm a winter person. This year I'll do it every day just to get out with people, you know.
When it's done, the ice palace is illuminated, and most years shines at the heart of the village until first thaw. This winter, the decision was made to take it down after just 2 weeks to limit crowding during the pandemic. Brian Mann, NPR News, Saranac Lake, New York.
It's 8:20. You're listening to the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Todd Moe.
And I'm Monica Sandreski. In just a minute, warm thoughts carved in ice in Glens Falls. After that, stick around for Bird Note. Bald eagles build the largest nests of all birds in North America and usually reuse them each year. We'll hear more on their nests coming up at 8:30. But first, a look at the weather. It is super mild. Right now, it's 30 degrees in Dannemora, 34 degrees in Cape Vincent, 28 in Lake Clear, 27 in Old Forge, and 32 degrees in Bolton Landing. Highs in the 30s today, as you could tell. Light snow possible, maybe some sleet. And tomorrow, highs around 40 degrees expected. Well, that's a little warm for ice, but we are eager to talk about it. The Hyde Collection in Glens Falls unveiled 6 ice sculptures created by the Iceman, Charlie Jones, on its frozen front lawn this month. The sculptures, with the theme A Winter of Hope, are in honor of all frontline workers and their dedicated service throughout the pandemic. The Hyde is hoping that the outdoor art offers time to reflect and a place for healing and a moment of peace.
Hyde Collection CEO Norman Dasher says the ice sculptures are, quote, a way to help our community heal during this challenging season and inspire hope for better days ahead, unquote. The icy art will be accessible day and night, and I caught up by phone with ice artist Charlie Jones, who says the sculptures are a team effort.
It's a process that does take hours. It's very laborious as far as sometimes we have to work on it, let it sit for a little while, work on it a little bit more, because again, anytime you apply any kind of energy to the ice, you're applying heat to it, and we don't want it to melt.
What kind of tools do you use?
Oh my goodness, we use all kinds of tools. We use everything from a chainsaw to a household iron to smooth out the ice. Just don't tell my wife, okay?
That's right.
She'll be looking for that iron. So you know, we work with an artist whose name is my wife. And Amy does a wonderful job of translating what we're looking for in a particular display. And when she went with his designs, it was perfect because it was going right for the idea of hope, heal, and love.
Tell me about, Charlie, if there's one piece in particular that you're most proud of, or kind of the story behind it, or the significance?
Out of the 6 pieces that we did, probably my favorite piece is the snowflake. It is one of those things that every snowflake is a little different, as we know, and just the intricate design. When sculpting ice, we're basically taking the most basic ingredient, water, and bringing it to its highest art form. And in the process, you begin to really get a feeling of what the design looks like and become a part of that design with the snowflake and kind of let it mold as you're making it. And the snowflake really embodies everything that we do when we work as an ice sculptor with the ice.
I always think of Tibetan mandalas when I think of ice sculptures, because these aren't permanent unless you were to leave one in a freezer forever. But, the elements being what they are, the temperatures rise. And do you ever want to just take one of these sculptures and say, I want to keep this in the freezer? I don't want to see it disappear.
Well, we've been doing this for a while now, and people ask me all the time, aren't you disappointed that it disappears? But the medium that we work with is only temporary. It's a temporary art. We have photographs. We can always look back at our photographs. And to correct you on keeping it in the freezer, even in the freezer, the ice sculptures will sublimate and they'll disappear, much like an ice cube in your freezer.
So it's nothing is forever, right?
No. But, we do get a lot of satisfaction out of seeing the looks on people's faces and that wow effect that you get in the first 10 minutes of looking at the sculpture. People love to look at the sculpture. They love to touch it gently. Just understand how it happens because, we work in concert with Mother Nature because, like you said, nothing lasts forever. And when we do put the ice out, it's really important that we understand Mother Nature's in charge always. I think we had, from last week's display, we actually had a little bit of a storm with a little bit of rain or freezing rain, which actually worked on the sculptures a little bit and changed them just slightly, the textures on them. So that was kind of unique to those first three sculptures that we did. I always explain to my my guests and my clients that Mother Nature is always in charge. They ask me, how long will the sculpture last? And I say, I always guarantee that it will melt. That's about the only thing I can guarantee. Mother Nature's in charge of everything else.
That's ice artist Charlie Jones. You'll find photos of some of the sculptures in front of the hide on our website, ncpr.org.
Is Chris Norman, Cape Breton flutist, great musician, snowflake hornpipe. And Chris has been to the North Country. He has performed at St. Lawrence University. He performed live on the air here one morning during the 8 o'clock hour years ago. Great musician, Chris Norman, with snowflake hornpipe. It's 8:30. We're off to Bird Note in just a moment. A reminder that the 8 o'clock hour is supported by Guideboat Realty, located in Saranac Lake, where health, history, and the arts meet in the Adirondacks. Your guide to Adirondack real estate, guideboatrealty.com, and CCOM Credit Union, serving the financial needs of people throughout northern New York and Vermont, in person, online, at ccom.org, and on your smartphone.
This is Bird Note. The bald eagle makes the largest nest of all birds in North America. Rather than building a new nest every year, a pair of eagles will repair their nest with new tree branches and reuse it. During field work in British Columbia in 2015, scientists came across an eagle nest made largely out of dried kelp. Back in the 90s, though, that very nest had been made out of tree branches. Kelp, a type of seaweed, ended up in that eagle's nest thanks to a furry neighbor. By 1930, sea otters had been hunted to near extinction in British Columbia. But since their reintroduction in 1969, they've had a big impact on the coastal ecosystem. By feeding on sea urchins, which destroy kelp, otters have aided the growth of underwater kelp forests. When kelp dies a natural death, it washes up on the beach and dries out, and sometimes ends up in an eagle's nest. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Did you know Bird Note delivers the wonder and joy of birds directly to your inbox? Sign up for our newsletter at birdnote.org to get a weekly preview of our shows, stories, photos, and more.
It's 8:32. This is the 8 o'clock hour here on North Country Public Radio. And this hour's programming is supported by Fisher, Bissett, Muldowney, and McArdle, attorneys and counselors at law with offices in Malone, Tupper Lake, and Saranac Lake, 800-941-5001. And the Adirondack Council, celebrating both clean drinking water and safe roads by helping to reduce excessive road salt, adirondackcouncil.org. And Monica, before I turn it over to you, I just want to let you know that we were talking about ice.
Yes.
This hour, there's an event happening on Racket Lake this Saturday, February 27th. They'll be doing their annual ice cutting. Don't know exactly when it starts, but we're told it starts early and will go until the ice house is full. So if you're, you know, into ice and ice cutting, stop by Racket Lake this Saturday.
This is my ignorance. Is that for ice fishing that ice cutting is for?
It's for the ice house. So,
That's so cool.
Yeah. So they'll fill the ice house with ice from Racket Lake.
Nice. Oh, that's definitely something to go check out. Well, and also for other cold winter events, the Lake George Winter Fest is still going on. This will be the last weekend for it. But if you're into hot chocolate, axe throwing, cross-country skiing, horse-drawn carriage rides, this is the place for you. You can check out more from the lakegeorgewinterfest.com/schedule. We are wrapping up the show for the day. Morning Edition continues in just a minute, and we'll hear a story on how the state of Virginia is abolishing the death penalty. Lawmakers in Virginia have voted to repeal the death penalty in part because of its disproportionate effect on Black residents. Democratic Governor Ralph Northam says he'll sign the bill. We'll hear more on that coming up at 8:45. Until tomorrow, I'm Monica Sandreski.
And I'm Todd Moe. Thanks for joining us.